At what point, Jim, did you realize and become aware that you were going to choke on your own carbon dioxide?
Well, remember, there's three people in that lunar module, which was designed for only two. The command module was a dead vehicle, so it was actually, I think that the mission control, actually it was Crew Systems at NASA, was also analyzing the whole situation, because they realized what the story was, and they either came up with this, or, and we also had a light that would come on that would tell us that the partial pressure of carbon dioxide was rising. And so they knew that they had to do something. Now, this is a perfect example of great initiative on the part of NASA, the Crew Systems Division, to find out what we had on board and how what we had on board could be used to get the partial pressure of carbon dioxide down to an acceptable level.
So how was that done? With whom were you in touch, if anybody? I mean, in Mission Control, well, were you in touch with MIT, with Grumman, with North America?
Not MIT. the Crew Systems people are right there at the center. But they told us, they said, hey, you're going to have a problem here pretty soon. And because these systems guys, they're the ones that know what's going on. I mean, that's their expertise. And so they said, we're working on a way to make a workaround. And they it was pretty, I don't say it's obvious, but they did start with what the crew had. I mean, it wasn't a sense in inventing something that they couldn't support. So they took the crew equipment, cardboard checklists and stuff like that, and duct tape, gray tape, and they used all of that and some tubes that were on board that they had down there, duplicates, and they used that and they came up with a scheme.
So describe that. The scrubbers, is that what they're called? What are those devices called?
There was one of the canisters. They were canisters. Actually, what the situation was, the dead command module had an environmental system that used square lithium hydroxide canisters that would remove the carbon dioxide. Command module was dead. The system in the lunar module had basically the same system, but they had lithium hydroxide canisters that were round and fit into
a ring
hole.
Made by different contractors, right?
Actually, I think it was made by the same contractor. Same contractor.
Different contractor.
So big engineering goof is what this was. So what we had to do is take a square canister from the supply we had in the command module, and then with the use of duct tape, a piece of plastic covering, a cover from a flight manual, and an old sock. That was it, and that's how we managed to configure a system that would flow the atmosphere of the lunar module around and it go through the lunar, through the canister that was outside the normal hole and yet remove the carbon dioxide. Very successful. And the pressure came down, and actually that was one of the most serious crises that we had faced, because we'd have been breathing our own exhalation here pretty soon if we didn't come up with a solution.
So was there a lesson there about duct tape? Or...
Don't go home without it.
For some reason, the Mercury spacecraft flew on yellow tape, and somewhere in all of that space flow, it went from yellow the gray duct tape. I don't know why that happened, but the Mercury must have had a ton of yellow tape holding stuff together in it.
You know, based on what you heard after you got back, what was this like for the families, for your families, Jim, Fred?
Well, I think, again, unlike the movie, NASA provided a protocol officer that stayed with the family and would do whatever needs that they wanted to go to the drugstore, answer phones. So, you know, they could play it however they wanted with the shielding, if you will, of that NASA official. Other astronauts were at the home as well to support the family during that time. They had a squawk box in the home where they could hear all the air-to-ground transmissions, and that was normal. In the case of this mission, they did something unusual for my mother in She was alone in Biloxi, Mississippi. And three engineers from Stennis Space Center were dispatched to take care of my mother. And they actually, one of them had to sleep on the sofa at night. But they stayed 24 hours a day with my mother to keep her appraised and be there to support her.
Jim?
Well, before the explosion occurred, of course, this being the third lunar landing mission, there was no one outside the way of press or anything like that. There was a solo guy from NASA who was entertaining my dog and reading papers and things like that. And then after the explosion occurred, there was all sorts of guys out there, all sorts of people wanted to put things on the lawn, which, by the way, in the movie, that was kind of acrid. My wife said, well, wait until Friday, and I'll take it up with my husband when he comes back. He can do all this. But,
you know, that brings up another question about the movie. Just generally, how accurate was the movie?
Well, we might have two different opinions of how technical it was. My opinion is that basically all the incidents of that movie were true, except for that time period of the argument between Hayes and Swikert, which were played by Kevin Bacon and Bill Paxton. That didn't occur. And we all asked, and including the actors, said, why are you putting this in? It's not in the air-to-ground transcripts. And I had sent the film people an air-to-ground transcript of everything so they could go through it as they did the movie. And Howard said, look it, I can't show anxiety and fatigue by just showing a guy's face with perspiration coming down. I have to have an oral confrontation of some sort. And so we said, well, if that's the case, put it in. But that was not true. Most of the incidents were all true, to my knowledge. Now, do you have any things different?
Fred?
Well, technically, there were many errors, but I think Ron, I've met Ron about four times, and he educated me on making movies. I can appreciate some things. Some things that took on the piloting skill, though. We did two manual maneuvers on the way home, two mid-courses, without the computer up. Those who saw the movie, it had the Earth going up and down, and like we're about to lose control. If you look at the data on the two maneuvers, on all three axes, roll, pitch, and yaw, the vehicle did not even exceed 1 degree in any axis. Now, at the same time, I'd say the maneuvers were very short. One was like, I think, 18 seconds, and one was like 21. And the one with the decent engine, it was pretty well trimmed through the center of gravity from the previous maneuvers. So if we had not touched anything, it probably wouldn't have deviated, been less than 5 degrees, if we'd not touched anything. So anyways, those kind of things were done for drama. He said, you want people on the edge of their seats, and if you want to sell tickets, make a good action movie, that's what it takes.
There is one thing I should mention. Some of the people who were very astute at NASA analyzed that thing completely and came up with 125 incidents that were really not true. For instance, I had a blue Corvette, not a red Corvette.
My favorite part of that was when they were in the simulator trying to get this power level down, and they got this multi-million-dollar simulator, and they acted like it didn't have an ammeter in it, and they put this meter in it, added the meter to the simulator so you could watch it go. And that was all for movies, because nobody likes just to see a number go up and down. They like to see the meters moving. So that's the kind of thing they did a little bit of. But
hey, Milton,
I thought it was pretty act. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed the movie.
There is one incident that no one caught that I know of, was the fact on that final burn in the movie when you see the Earth far away and the picture is being done, we're looking at the space end of the spacecraft as it's burning and it's moving back and forth. We didn't fire that way. We didn't fire towards the Earth. We fired perpendicular to it to change the angle of the approach to the Earth. No one caught it that was looking at it.
Milton, go ahead.
I'm just going to say nobody wanted to see a picture of just black sky through the... through the...
Milton and Bill, you talked about the simulators while this is all going on in real time, the simulator on the ground. Who was in the simulator or simulators? How many were in use at the time? And who was in those simulators and what were they doing?
Well, they were probably half of the astronaut office were over there 24 hours a day. Many of them never went to bed. And they simulated all the possible procedures and tried to make these procedures that normally take, how long would you say, Bill, about 2 months or so to smooth out and get into a final position. They made all that happen in 2 days or a day and a half. So that was a pretty big effort. And I know Jim kept saying, when are you going to get me those procedures? And I can understand that because the Earth was getting bigger all the time. And
once those procedures were decided, I mean, you were literally creating new procedures, right?
Yes.
How did you transmit those? I mean, given what we heard from Fred about how much memory you had up there, how do you get those procedures up to them so they could use them and make sense out of
them? We did it the old-fashioned way. We read them up and they wrote them down.
Wow. And...
or whatever they had up there, very carefully.
So how, describe that, Jim, having to write those procedures down and make sure you got them right. I mean, was it as tired as you guys were? Well, how much of a danger that you might have missed a number or whatever they are?
There's a classic incident when I had to transfer the guidance parameters, the angles, from the command modules guidance system, which was dying, into the lunar module system, which had we had to start up. And I had a little book, and it had a change of things in it. In other words, you had to add certain numbers to what you read in the command module to get what you had to put into the computer in the lunar module. And as I was adding this thing, I was telling the people at Mission Control, I said, would you check my arithmetic to make sure I did this? And so they said everything was okay. So, you know, even when you're in a tense situation like that, adding 2 plus 2 might be 5 if you're not careful.
Fred, were you involved in writing any of this down too or not?
Yeah, there were fairly minor changes, like the burn procedure. We did 3 dips burn, decent engine burns. The only thing we had to do to be careful was we used the same portion of the book, and we used different ink or different writing utensils. We had a lead pencil, we had a Pentel, and we had a blue ballpoint. So each time we'd scribble out the old stuff and just rewrite with the new color to modify that couple of pages. The biggest procedure was the power up of the command module. Which is a very similar situation to what I mentioned before about powering it down. Remember, it was never supposed to be powered off. So there was no procedure to power it back up in flight. So that was another big invention by a lot of people on the ground. They read it up, and Jack, I think, copied. I wasn't involved. Jack Schweigert, I think, copied most of that. Again, we had one thing. We did not have any blank paper. We had no blank paper on board. So again, I had to rip off backs and fronts of other books, checklists, and number the pages carefully, and so that's how that was done.